and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 17th of April, 2024, and you're on the clock with Erin Green. If it's a Wednesday, that means it's a Man Down Mashup Wednesday, where we mash up the two shows, On the Clock with Erin Green and Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry. The term mashup comes from the young people. It's from popular culture, where two artists would mash up a song to create something new, or mash up a genre, two genres to create something new. And that's why we use the term mashup. We use the term man down because often it was C.A. Newry and Mr. Ian Munnings against Erin Green, and every once in a while I'd have to put my hand in the air and say, man down, I need some air. We miss Mr. Munnings, but hopefully he will join us again soon for the Man Down mashup session. We're also looking for other co-hosts to join us on that session to broaden the views brought to the discussion. Good morning, Mr. Newry.
Good morning, Miss Green.
How you doing?
I kind of vexed. I'm vexed rotted.
I noticed you were late. I was about to tell the people because you were late, we was going to do open line until you got here.
No. I can tell you what happened, right?
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Late because I realized someone entered my car. I was going to say burglarized, but burglarized means breaking entry, right? But my car door was open.
Hold on. What do you mean? Was it open or was it unlocked?
Unlocked.
Okay, so I mean, it could still be burglary.
Yeah, okay. They burglarized my car.
Okay.
And entered it and gone in my... There's no device where you put the shades.
Yeah.
I thought that's the last place someone would look, right? They put the $40 for the child and say, hey, this for the child lunch money here. Let me put that $40 there.
You leave money in your car, sir?
It's like a small change.
Normally, $40 is small change?
Small change. And I put it there and say, okay, if I put it into the car, I mean, put it into the house, the wife can take it. So I got to be hiding money back and forth. So I say, this could be for the child.
So you had to, you had a triage, and you had to determine
where
the greatest risk was.
Where it's safest.
Don't say where it's safest, where the greatest risk was.
Risk wasn't, right?
Right.
And I put it there, and I saw in our community group, our WhatsApp group. They said, oh, there's a stranger in the morning, and the dogs are barking, and he's touching cars, so be aware. Uh-huh. So I said, nobody goes to my car. I have an old car, you know, a suspicious and assuming car. And I went in and I realized my visor's down. I said, hey, who opened up this? Then I remember, didn't you put $40 there yesterday?
Now, let me ask you, when did you put the $40 there?
Okay.
While you were in the yard?
No, when I was driving. I sure I did it when I was driving because I assume I made change from maybe the gas station or whatever it is. I said, okay, let me separate these monies now.
Is it a regular practice of storing small change or documents, important things that you want at hand in that space?
Not that space. I have a different hiding space inside the car, too.
Right, because I'm just wondering, if it's somebody familiar to the community, it may be that they have observed a pattern of behavior.
Where my car is parked inside my yard, it's not visual from anyone unless they are physically in the yard.
Right.
And no one was physically in the yard. But like I said, I did it beforehand. So I'm not concerned about the money. I mean, that's $40 I got to give the child still, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just feel violated. Like someone took advantage of me.
And I mean,
I feel vulnerable.
And that's a very important, I think, sentiment to share, because that is the experience of many people. They can acknowledge that the $20, the $40, for some people, the $100, the $200, for some people, the $500, the $1,000. People can acknowledge that the loss of the money is the minor part of it, right? I can make more money. I could find more money. In some instances, though, that's the biggest part of it. Yeah. It's the violation of boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Leave my things alone.
There's a social contract that...
That's my yard.
Right. And what is in my yard
supposed to be mine.
Belong in my yard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That if there's money, that money flowed out my bag as I was walking to the house, unless the wind or a bird took it, it should stay there.
Yeah.
And if you walk past and see it, your response would be... To go to the door.
I find it's $20 in my yard. In your yard.
Yeah, yeah, right. Knock on the door and say, hey, look out there. See that? That's that in your yard. Go get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the social contract. We don't understand the violation that people feel when you breach the boundary, when you ignore the boundaries.
Well, enough of that. Enough of that. I shall smile. But if you want to pass by the Guided Radio and drop off $20 to add to my $20 fund to get it $40, feel free. You may say, hey, Nuri, here's some $5 toward the child's lunch money. I'll be happy. I'll take it there. I guess just put an envelope. Just tell Jennifer this for CA Nuri, and she'll make sure I get that. Someone text and say they can leave $5?
I have several texts here.
Saying they can leave $5?
I can tell you what they say right now.
Is that why coming to give me $5? No.
The first one says, what kind of car you drive? Asking for a friend. He may need luck money too. And yeah. I mean, that's a very important point.
Yes.
Because it's a very important cultural point.
Mm-hmm.
We have socialized Bahamians to believe that they can benefit from someone's downfall.
No, no, I could. I see the humor.
That is the mechanism. I mean, I see the humor in what the text is saying. It's called, that's political satire,
yes,
right?
Yes, beautifully done.
And
I like it.
It opens an opportunity to talk about this. Like, for instance, many Bahamians don't feel empowered unless they are disempowering somebody else, right? We don't see taking something from somebody as disadvantaging them. We've convinced ourselves that God has blessed us in this moment, even though it is that we're violating somebody. Another text, Aaron CA, can you share which area that is, please?
Another one. It's Fox Hill, right to Step Street, right next to the pink house where they had a shooting. You can stop there. Ask from CA.
Don't
stop.
CA don't live there.
Just say house number 15.
First of all, Step Street is a wonderful community.
Of course.
That's struggling with the tensions, the great tensions of wealth and poverty, right? It sits on the boundary of a very wealthy, what is presumed to be a very wealthy constituency. But I don't think it is in that constituency. But we're not talking down on the people of Congo Town today.
Not today, but do that tomorrow.
We understand the socioeconomic dynamics that are larger than them, but have a great impact on how they live. Another text, fake news, crimes against the vehicle are down. What's the probability that this could have really happened? I hope you didn't report this. A single instance may take up the crime by 20%. Crime stats by 20%.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a crime against a vehicle. Vehicle is a thing. It's a crime against a person.
That's why I feel violated. I'm not sure if the car feels violated.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? That's another very interesting point. You know, I want to talk at some point about the role of the corporate citizen and how did corporations become citizens and how did corporations become people in law?
Hmm.
Right? Tech says, crime is down, but the fear of crime is sky high. That, sir, is also a very important point. Mr. Nuri, you wanted to talk about the Grand Bahama Port Authority today.
Yes, all Grand Bahama today. So those persons who are interested in Grand Bahama Port Authority, what's happening, I believe that before we, When I say we, I mean the collective of the Bahamas, mm-hmm. approach, decide on where we stand. We need to understand what is the Grand Bahama Port Authority, the history of it, how we came to this particular point. This couldn't happen overnight, right? This had to have happened over a series of time. And mistakes must have been made by our government in terms of policing, in terms of overlooking the Grand Bahama Port Authority. And I need to identify what we as Bahamians, as the Bahamian government, did wrong. What did the Port Authority do right? I see recently that the government has announced an investigative committee.
There's a very interesting story when I go through the lists of stories that I found from 2023 to Monday of this week. I found that story you were referencing, but if you read deeper into the story, that committee was actually composed under a Christie administration.
Okay.
Absolutely. But I have reference to that in the notes that I gathered today.
Yes. So, yes, so that's the goal today. It's a bit more maybe an informative, intuitive discussion, not siding with anyone in particular, right? But edification of Bahamians in general. So when the government comes to us and say, we need your support, we can say, yes, we support you, government, and we support you because of this. Or mm-hmm. we can say, government, you have a duty of care to us also. And these are, when you are seeking the port to comply, we want you to comply with this simultaneously. So this is what the discussion is about. I hope the listening audience can appreciate that and that to work with us. Any new information that they can add to the conversation in the vein of accomplishing that would be appreciative.
Absolutely. So let me read the list of articles that I found and that we will reference for today's discussion. We start on November the 22nd of last year, this 2023, in the Nassau Tribune. Government ready to step to plate and buy GBPA. The government has been negotiating to acquire the Grand Bahama Port Authority for months, with the Prime Minister yesterday confirming it is, quote, willing to step to the plate, close quotes, and agree a deal itself. Philip Davis, KC, speaking as the cabinet met in Grand Bahama yesterday or the day before, said the government had informed the existing owners of Freeport's quasi-governmental authority, the Haywood and St. George families, that it is prepared to acquire the GBPA and its affiliated assets if no suitable private investor or buyer emerges. Then, January 18th, 2024, government ups heat on GBPA in the Nassau Guardian. The Davis administration has abandoned its bid to acquire the GBPA, Progressive Liberal Party Chairman Fred Mitchell said on the Wednesday, adding that the government is instead pursuing efforts to get all it is owed by the GBPA for services provided to Freeport.
Can I pause there? Has anyone come to the Bahamian public and say the dollarization or the value of the Grand Bahama Port Authority? Say this is how much its value. This is how much, if we wanted to pursue to buy it, this would be the price.
I've not seen those figures, but I do have a story with commentary from an individual who is identified as a senior local attorney who asked a similar question. Hmm. Right?
Because I see there was overtures to suggest that our government was prepared to purchase it. But I'm not sure we have that type of money. So why do the overtures, was it just for grandstanding? Or we had that type of money to purchase a Grand Bahama Port Authority someplace? Because I think that's
it is a question.
If it's not $1 billion, it's near $1 billion worth of assets to purchase.
It's a question that arose for me as well when I was reading the article, Government Failed to Protect Interests in GBPA, but that's the 10th of April, where I think it is Candia Dame spoke with senior Grand Bahama attorney Maurice Glinton mm-hmm. about the matter, right? And he asks similar questions, not necessarily the same, but similar questions.
I'd like to interject here. I think, I'm almost certain, Maurice Glinton attorney mm-hmm. is suing the Grand Bahama Port Authority for breach. and that case is pending, it's coming up any minute now.
I think he references that case in the article, right? So if we get to the article, we can reference all of that. And I'm glad that you brought that context in, because it was something, like, I knew that there was a case, but it's so important to have full context, mm-hmm. right? Like, why is this person speaking on the matter? How is it that they are a stakeholder? What is their interest
yes.
in the discussion, in the matter? I think that's important for listeners, for readers, to be able to assess or weigh the value of the contributions of that individual.
And perhaps the government can join on the case with Maurice Clinton Casey to say, hey, I see you already started this procedure for a long time, and it makes no sense reconstructing the wheel. Let's join and share expense on it. Or maybe that's what's happening now, I'm not sure. But I know there's a case pending that's coming up soon to be judged or tried or whatever the correct term for that.
Actually, you want to let's go to that story
whenever
since we're
ready.
Talking
you're
about
doing
it.
The reading.
Government failed to protect interests in GBPA. This story is in the Nassau Guardian, 10th of April. While the Davis administration now claims the GBPA owes the public purse $357 million in reimbursements for certain activities and works carried out in Freeport and is threatening to go to arbitration on the matter, the whole affair exposes the negligence of the government of the Bahamas in failing for decades to protect the interests of Bahamians and its ownership stake in the Port Authority. Senior Grand Bahama attorney Maurice Clinton mm-hmm. opined yesterday. So those are the thoughts of senior attorney Maurice Clinton. Quote, if, as I understand it, the government's complaint is that the port owes them money and that they are prepared to go to arbitration on that issue, I would be inclined to see the matter quite differently, Clinton said. Quote, I suspect it goes back to a case that I'm doing now in preparation for which I shared with the Prime Minister basically some positions with respect to the Hawksbill Creek Agreement and how since 1968, when the government acquired 7.5% in the Port Authority, that it was the government that fell down on its duty. And that duty was simply this. Yes, there was an obligation on the Port Authority to account for the financial status of that investment, as indeed the entire investment. But it was also the government's duty, and in particular, the duty of the Minister of Finance, every year or periodically, to lay before Parliament the status of the investment, this being basically a national asset. Because one of the things we don't do in this country and haven't done, unlike many other countries, is that periodically we need to know what is the national wealth. Full stop, close quotation. Clinton told the Nassau Guardian, quote, what I suspect is going on is there's an attempt here to essentially force the current principles out. And you don't have to do that publicly. They, the government, should make their wishes known very secretly, very privately, but very firmly. But this is what happens when you have a government without credibility. Full stop, close quotes. That was Mr. Maurice Clinton speaking. There's a lot in there.
There is a lot in there. I'm tempted to say, stick a pin in it. Right, but no, we need to continue. Even though we want to do commentary now, I just say underlying that and just come back to it and do commentary then.
But to make the point that the questions that you raise have been similar questions
yes.
have been iterated in the media.
And I appreciate Maurice Clinton because we do share similar concerns. And this needs to be a national concern where the Bahamian people challenge our government. You have a duty of care. And why, we've voiced this before, where I said, why is this so public? Why is this jockeying so public and loud? This is untoward of our government, right? This mm-hmm. is from Banana Republics. It's loud and going back
now,
and forth.
Now, I don't like that.
Term Banana Republic?
Yeah.
That's what Banana Republic does. I'm hoping the Bahamas is not a Banana
is
Republic.
Is that what Banana Republics do?
Yeah, they fight back and forth.
Banana Republics do whatever the people who told them they can only sell bananas can do.
They sell peaches too.
Anyway, there is another article on the list to read from.
Okay, that's finished with?
Well, let me close out the article, and it's just a little, another couple of sentences at the end of that.
One of the things I as you look for it again, I point out is Glinton make reference that he approached the prime minister and gave him information. And it seems as if just me now, just me, mm-hmm. he's now being left out of the suit, or he's not a part of the government's pursuit. He's separate and apart. Even though he said that let's see if I can paraphrase him. I give the prime minister some insight, just me paraphrasing now, about what I'm planning to do, my lawsuit. And it seems as if they now have started their own lawsuit based on what I've said or given him initially.
Well, let me read the quote. Quote, if, as I understand it, the government's complaint is that the port owes them money and that they are prepared to go to arbitration. Okay, I would see that issue quite differently. He goes on to say, I suspect it goes back to a case that I'm doing now in preparation for which I shared with the Prime Minister basically some positions with respect to the Hawksbill Creek Agreement. I mean, if he has a matter he's preparing for, mm-hmm. right, it's important for him to understand the state's case, right? Mm-hmm. So that he can understand the places in which his case may butt up against the state's case, right?
But I want to point out that arbitration is different from a court case. He has a court case, and arbitration may come before, earlier, and between just the
right.
judge
and the result of the arbitration may potentially impact any ruling on his case. It may, potentially.
Yeah, potentially. Right? Or dissolve the need for him to pursue.
That's why, I mean, it's a great, let's stick a pin. Nothing happens in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. All of these things, that's why we have to have systems that are functional, that are transparent, so that people in the environment can understand what else is happening in the environment and how it may impact them. And also in their own work, they can determine how what they are doing may impact other people in the environment and thus the entire environment. So let me read the last part of the article. Government failed to protect interest in GBPA, Nassau Guardian, 10th of April, with commentary from senior Grand Bahama attorney Maurice Glinton. In making its claim on the $357 million, the government pointed to Section 1, Subsection 5, of the Hawksbill Creek Agreement, which specifies that costs borne by the government for certain activities and services provided are to be reimbursed by the GBPA for amounts in excess of customs duties and emergency taxes collected. But Glinton suspects there's something else at play. Quote, you've got some people who would want to get their own private interests operating in Freeport under the guise of bringing in new people, close quotes, he charged. You can find that article online or in the 10th of April, Nassau Guardian, government failed to protect interests in GBPA. Now, this article and Glinton's commentary in particular is worthy of interrogation, because when I read this quote, yes, there was an obligation on the Port Authority to account for the financial status of that investment, as indeed the entire investment, but it was also the government's duty, and in particular the duty of the Minister of Finance every year or periodically to lay before Parliament the status of the investment, this being basically a national asset. I just want to stick a pin there. It's not a full stop, but we stopped there. I am concerned that Glinton may be suggesting, or it is that I am inferring from his words, that he is suggesting that, well, the government never gave them a bill, so what do you expect them to pay?
I do agree. And this is why.
But should a responsible corporate citizen or corporate party
No, we could talk of business.
Hold on. Understanding that there is a bill outstanding that I expect a communication from the state as to what is owed by us, if anything. Do I not have a duty? And I'm talking now ethical, right? I'm talking an ethical professional duty to demand that the state follow that procedure. It may not be a duty prescribed in law, right? The contractual terms of the relationship may not say if, okay, you see the commercial enterprise bill?
Mm-hmm.
It has a clause that says you apply for the work permit. If the government takes longer than 14 days to respond, the work permit is automatically approved. Like a clause like that, that would say if the government does not send the bill within the 30 days required by law, then the bill is null and void. So I'm saying that there may not be a statutory or contractual duty to demand that the government present the invoice to be paid, but is there not a professional or an ethical duty to say, you need to determine whether we owe you money or not?
And you add into the story. And I appreciate what you're saying, and that's just for edification and posturing. And let's put that aside, the posturing, and say what they should have done, or the principle or not. And add, if you and I are driving in my car,
mm-hmm.
I usually fill the tank, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as I was driving, you said, let me put $10 in your tank.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ask you to, right? Same thing with in terms of the port authority responsibilities. You decided to pay for utilities or whatever it is, whatever bill, right? Without communicating whether this is a loan or whatever it is. After once, twice, three times of you stopping me, no, you can put $10 in your car because I'm driving in it. We're partners in general. I can assume that, okay, you are paying this. I'm just assuming that you are paying this one, right? Because you didn't ask me back for the money. Say, Nuri, you know, I put $10 in your car and I put it inside the 40 times. I thought you was going to pay me back. But as time goes on and you continually put the 10, the 20, the 30
right.
dollars in
so
my
there's
car.
There's a difference between the expectation that I will continue to put the $10 in every time I get in the car and the expectation that I would have that anytime I put $10 in, I can expect you to pay the $10 back. But this is what I'm saying, because I think you started off with the former, the suggestion that I've been putting the $10 in the car without you asking.
Yeah, nice of you.
And then one day I come in and I don't put the $10 in the car.
No.
But that's how you started.
I'm saying that one day you come and ask for the money. All of the money is back
right.
from the $10.
But that is a relationship that's not governed by a contractual agreement.
Here? Yes, so
let's hold that point
mm-hmm.
and let's go through a bio, basically, of what the Port Authority is.
Yes, and that's important. And I'm just saying that...
Here's
the point. There are times when you assume a role, like you clean up a person's yard, or you're doing a service, and after, or like when you have an entryway or a freeway for easement.
Right.
I've been continuously unobstructed.
Public access to the beach.
Unobstructed.
It's open for 364 days a year, and for the owner to maintain his ownership of that private that private piece of land, he closes it one day a year on January 1st.
And let's say you did not close it during on 3, 4, 5 years.
Right.
Right? Now I assume that, no, this is a regular thoroughfare. I assume, by the example that Maurice Clinton gave, that over the years, 1 year, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years of not charging the port at all to remind them that I've been doing this, one would naturally assume, hey, this is a symbiotic relationship. Y'all sometimes do this, and I'm sometimes doing this, despite the contract, because you really acknowledge the contract. But through the system of policing.
Once a contract exists, that's the predominant law. That's the governing, those are the governing provisions. That the contract has not been enforced over a matter of time does not negate the terms of the contract, unless there is a clause in the contract that says, if you don't send a bill for 5 years straight, then the bill is null and void. There has to be a clause. The point is, these things are governed by terms. I mean, with the example that you use, right? Mm-hmm. Watch this. Mm-hmm. There's a law in the book that says you can only turn left on red where there is a sign posted. 4 years after that law was gazetted, the superintendent in charge of road traffic came on the radio and said, yeah, but we're not enforcing that law. But what drivers must understand is, once that law exists on the books, it can be enforced by any officer at any time, because convention or practice, cultural practice, does not trump the law itself. So the driver who has watched 100 drivers turn left on red, maybe even in the presence of officers, and none of those drivers got ticketed, they cannot go before the magistrate and say, well, Your Honor, I watch 100 people do it, and I watch the police not enforce it, so it must be okay for me to do it. The magistrate will tell you the law is on the books, and you, as a driver, have an obligation to know the terms under which you're driving and what you're obligated to do.
And before we move on, I want to
I think the same thing applies in this matter.
Let me make this point.
Yes. Right,
before you move on to reading that article. In the hotel,
mm-hmm.
right, unions have contracts.
Right.
As in terms of job descriptions for their employees.
Mm-hmm.
I could give an example. Houseman, his job is to clean open space area.
Right.
Right. But when you assign a houseman an additional job,
mm-hmm.
that is not in their
job description. Right.
The union representative said, no, object, you can't do that.
Right.
But once you start doing it, your contract has automatically changed.
That's why we're not letting any more Fergusons in the union now, Mr. Urie. It's a crisis point. That's why we're not letting any more.
Let me make this point. Once you start doing it, and especially if it becomes a habit, once you start doing it, now it becomes a part of your job despite the job description. I just want to put that juxtaposed to what.
Right.
Once
that's a practice.
Yes.
No, but no, the terms of the agreement trump the practice.
But they're still same thing as what do you call it? The wife's or when you have the wife, common law wife, the practice of having the wife under your homestead makes you have a legal obligation despite not having a marriage contract.
But then,
the practice of not enforcing or demanding the money has now had legal ramifications.
No.
But this is what the Casey is pointed out.
This is why it has
legal ramifications.
That's why I said, let's stick a pin and go back into that conversation, because I think it's worthy of interrogation.
Yes.
Because that may be even political culture and political practice, mm-hmm. but it does not trump the provisions of the terms laid out.
But there's such thing as common law, and common law may
yeah, but that. Then they had to create the Inheritance Act to provide in law provisions for that common law person.
Okay.
Good morning, caller.
Morning, guys. How are you this morning?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Aaron Green and C.A. Nuri. Listen, the port has a contractual agreement with the government, and it could have been any government that's in power, right?
Right.
And this contract this agreement is laid out in their contract, right? So at the end of the day, the government has not taken the port to court for all of the monies that the port owe. They're taking them to arbitration court for the 5 years. So, you know, at the end of the day, the government has a very good case. It doesn't mean because they weren't asked for the money in the last 25, 30, 40, 50 years means that the agreement doesn't stand, because it's written within the agreement, right, Aaron Green?
That's what I've been offering in the discussion this morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
You know, so a lot of people, persons are miscuing this whole thing and saying, well, why didn't the government go after the port all those years? You got to remember, this is a different government.
No,
a different
it's the same government. Our government is continuous. No, you can't use that. Our government is continuous.
It is the same
government.
A different administration.
But it has nothing to do with a contractual agreement, okay? the contractual agreement, whatever terms and however long the contractual agreement stands.
Yes.
You know, you can't just go and change things in the contractual agreement without both sides being at the table. Could you?
The government changed it. Yes, it did.
Because the government didn't change anything without the port have knowledge. You're forgetting, Mr. Nuri. The Prime Minister have been to the port on several occasions and spoke with the port privately.
And they
on
disagree.
The same matter,
and they disagree with the government, yes.
Pardon me?
And they disagree with the Prime Minister, yes or
so
no?
So now, what do you expect for the Prime Minister to do?
That's not what we're talking about today.
This year is in the contractual agreement.
We're not talking about that today.
What are you talking about?
We're talking about the two different sides. We already acknowledge the Prime Minister should sue. We're talking about what are the issues.
I mean, okay. That's morning caller. Don't mind me. Don't mind me. Thank you very much,
yes.
Caller.
See, like I said, this is the show is we are not discussing whether we agree with the government
or with the port authority.
We're interrogating the issues.
The issues as they've been raised in the public domain through the media, right?
Yes.
Using the...
As a Bahamian,
Nassau
we're supposed
Guardian
to support the government no matter what. Right, because it's our tax money got to be spent.
Let me go.
But the issue.
I don't like how you put all those words together.
No matter what, if the government say the port owe the
let's
money,
let's go to the call.
But the issue here is what happened, and we want to go through
right.
what had happened. So we either don't do it
again,
we correct the issue.
Let's take these two callers. Let me read through the list of articles. Right, so we could
take the caller. But let me point this: the caller mentioned that the port changed the contract. But the government also changed the contract. Now, if you say, Cecil, your job is to clean Guardian's office, and you clean it, you change the contract.
No.
How you get to clean my office?
You don't worry about
it's
that.
It's Mike supposed to clean it. You're supposed to stop and enforce that I clean the contract. But
absolutely.
Instead...
Caller, I'm so sorry. We go into a break.
Already?
We have to go to a break. You hold the line. Please, caller, hold the line. We get back from the break. We'll go straight to you guys, send the text. Then the history of the creation of the Grand Bahama,
yes,
who
important.
Founded it, and why. This is
why.
Important for the conversation. You're on the clock with Aaron Green on his Man Down Mashup Wednesday with Guardian Radio AM. We'll be right back.
You see how Cora eye look funny, all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
So what you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman, does mind her business, take care of them churn and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I land up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call a text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them and the messages get on mix up before it leave your phone so nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
Bring your family, bring your friends, bring your gal. Come witness history in the making at the 2024 World Athletic Relays Chase the Sun, Paradise to Paris, happening here in Nassau, Bahamas. Hundreds of the best runners from more than 40 countries will compete for their place in the 2024 Paris Olympics, May 4th and 5th at the Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium. Get your tickets early at worldrelaysbahamas24.org or at the Andre Rogers Baseball Stadium box office.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News Sales Representative Kavandre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
morning. Welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green, caller. I promised we'd come straight to you. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning, Erin.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Newry.
Blessings to you.
Listen, Erin, I have a question or two.
Mm-hmm.
First, did the government provide an itemized list of work done on companies that did the work and the amount paid to each company with receipts to present to the port?
At what time? You mean historically?
At any time.
Or in
the last 4 years.
Wait, no. Historically or in this particular request? Because I tell you...
in this particular request.
I wanted to get through more of the stories, right? For instance, there is a wonderful story in The Guardian, again, I think written by Candia Dames, that gives a history of this effort, right? Here's an article. GBPA vehemently disputes it owes a dollar of the $357 million government claim. Now, this is from
They said they ain't owe nothing?
Right. This is from the Nassau Tribune. I just want to read this quote. However, multiple sources again questioned why the government has waited until now, some 60 years or six decades, to try and enforce a Hawksbill Creek Agreement clause dating from the 1950s and 1960s. Right? There are these, anyway, these articles are...
We should, for 60 years, we never charged the port?
This is why it's important... Hold on, caller, Nuri, pause for a second. This is why it's important to understand when it was founded, who was it founded by, and why it was founded, what was its intention, right? And I just want to... I want to read a bit from that. Creation of the Grand Bahama Port Authority from the Grand Bahama Museum. Groves consulted with his old friend Stafford Sands, and the two of them came up with the plan for what would become the Grand Bahama Port Authority. Groves' initial concept was for a standard free port, completely free of import and export duties. But Sands observed that the Bahamian government depended heavily on import duties for income. This would not be acceptable. They developed a modified plan for a largely tax and regulation free zone. Forgive me. The port and industrial zone would be used for excise-free transshipment of goods, especially oil, and for some processing of for export. Any items that were distributed within the Bahamas would automatically become taxable. They initiated talks with the Bahamian government in 1953, which led to the drafting and signing of the Hawksbill Creek Agreement on the 4th of August, 1955. The Hawksbill Creek Agreement, this is from Wikipedia, named in honor of the Hawksbill Sea Turtle, signed in 1955, established a city and free trade zone on Grand Bahama Island with an aim of spurring economic development. The Grand Bahama Port Authority was created to develop and administer the land and thus the city of Freeport. I want to find a segment. I want to give me a moment to find.
Let's conclude with the caller.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Go ahead, caller. What's your commentary?
Okay, I heard all about Erin, and I've heard that before, but I'm asking for now that they requested this money 5 years back. Is there an itemized list of work done? And names of company that did the work.
Okay,
to
yes.
My thing is, I tend to believe what, I know I don't know much about the Hospital Creek Agreement and those persons, but I tend to believe, take their word, I'm so sorry to say,
but let me interject, caller.
They tend to be not trustworthy.
Caller.
I got to stop
you.
Item.
Look, I got to pause you. No, caller. Our job as Bahamians is to side with the government. I ain't let nobody go and have those treasonous talk and say they side with foreign entities.
Did you tell Mr. Mitchell that when he said he ain't even interested in the idea?
Mr. Newry, sign me up for treason then.
No, you're a good woman. You're a good woman. Okay. I can't have signing up for treason.
Thank you, caller. Thank you very much. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning, Erin.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Newry.
Good morning.
The issue that is being discussed is similar to what came up on Friday when 52 asked what was an agreement. And I called in afterwards and said that, do you all know what is an indenture?
Tell us what an indenture is right now.
Okay. an indenture is a legal agreement, a legal contract, or a legal document.
Mm-hmm.
If it is not legal, that makes the document or the act of making up the document a nullity. It is no good. That's like saying the document is, you're familiar with the term void ab initio?
We are now. Tell us exactly what it
okay.
means.
Okay. Void ab initio means, in Latin, in law,
mm-hmm.
from the time the signatures go on that document, from the beginning, ab initio means from the beginning, from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So if a document is signed between two parties
mm-hmm.
and the law does not permit it, that means it's void ab initio from the time it was signed.
Okay.
Under the International Persons Land Holdings Act, a foreign person who does not get an approval from the investment board and ask any landowner to sign an agreement or a transaction to lease land or to acquire an interest in land or to purchase the land
mm-hmm.
and they didn't get the investment board approval prior to signing that agreement, mean that that agreement is void ab initio.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And to add more, there's a case called Woods, which is Capital Insurance.
Let's bring it home, though. Let's bring it home to Grand Bahama, because you're losing me.
No, don't be lost. The thing is, if a document is legal, remember these things.
Oh, okay.
There's a statute of limitation, right? So if you don't ask me for the bill and you take a couple of years, now the law may permit you to recover 5 years back, but it doesn't.
Right, but that's covered by provisions in law and not just political convention.
Right, yeah, in the culture. This practice of culture and thing doesn't matter. You have to look at the contract according to what is on paper, because under Woods versus Capital Insurance out of the UK system, that was around in 2009, I think it was, the law, and there's other older cases. You cannot import any word into a contract, and you cannot take out any word out of the contract. You have to stick to what, and the law sticks to the contract as to what the contract says.
Okay, thank you very much, caller.
I appreciate that, caller. Let's go to the next caller there. Go ahead, Wally. Go ahead, caller.
Good afternoon. I'm CA and Aaron.
Morning.
I see what the government is doing. They are carrying out the contract. Company in no government in 70 years never issue a bill. So that's they can't do nothing. That's money gone. But this government
now is that political culture, or is that according to the terms of the contractual relationship between the two parties?
Yes, according to the contract, the government.
Is there a statute of limitations in the Hawksbill Creek Agreement that says if an invoice is not presented within 5 years, it's then null and money's owed as null and void?
The contract is still, I guess, studying in the clause.
So then, it's not you talking about a convention or a culture, and not a practice.
I don't know if there's a statute of limitation.
Sir, I'm asking you a question. You're responding in the affirmative initially, but then you're talking in the negative subsequently. Let's not do that. It's a heavy, heavy, wordy, conceptual conversation we have in now. Let's be tight.
Let me ask you a question, Aaron. We now appreciate the fact that it's been 60-odd years, no bill has been presented. And that's just for argument's sake. I'm not saying that's accurate, but let's say for 60-odd years, no bill has been presented. There's a dispute whether that cause... No, I'm setting up a scenario. I want you to respond to the end of the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a dispute on whether that negates the responsibility or cancels the contract despite. Now, this is my issue. The Hawksbill Creek Agreement ended some years ago, right? And the new government, or the continuous government, came and said, hey, all what was happening before, I am in agreement with. Means the non-payment and all that. I want to extend it. The same way how...
No, that's not it. Don't stop.
They extended it.
Stop throwing words into the contract that did not exist when the contract was signed. Stop doing that.
So you're trying to say...
You have to have the conversation in the terms of the subject we're talking about.
My average is 60 years of not collecting it. Unless they wanted to continue exactly how it was before.
Unless there's a contract
that which is not being enforced.
Unless there's a statute of limitations clause or a clause that describes that, then no. You see, look at the time, Mr. Newry.
Go ahead.
Dear texters, I have your text. We're going to read them into the next hour. We're going to start with that. We're going to continue with a description of what the expectations are from the Port Authority and the government when we read the article, More Clarity Needed on GBPA Dispute. More Clarity Needed on GBPA Dispute. That's from the Nassau Guardian. You guys stay tuned. You're on the clock. We're on the clock. You can hear it by the music. We'll be right back.